All right, Joe, a lot to get to today. Got to get right into it. The more I talk about and think about this Alec Baldwin movie set shooting story, it's just, I think it is very interesting in exactly like where culpability lies.
Yes.
For how you go about this. The charges against Baldwin dropped. He was facing involuntary manslaughter charges. The investigation kind of, is continuing on, you would say, because we haven't really gotten to the bottom of it. The armorer on the set, the armorer would be the person who is in charge of the weapons, is still facing charges, but not Alec Baldwin. And a Baldwin is now going back to filming this movie, which is
wild, right?
That is something.
Yeah. Now in Montana, no longer set in New Mexico. They'll be filming in Montana. The thing with Alec Baldwin is, people have their opinions of him, but in this case, the interview with George Stephanopoulos that you kept playing the clip from this morning, where he said, I didn't pull the trigger, I didn't touch it. I mean, that's clearly, in my opinion, I don't know much about guns, but I do know that the trigger has to be pulled. If you're lying about that, you know what I mean? I mean, that's something he just never has come.
I don't necessarily believe that's a lie, but I absolutely believe it's not true. Do you know the difference?
Please explain.
I think it is kind of obvious that he pulled the trigger of the weapon. I don't think he's lying when he says, I didn't pull the trigger, because I don't think you can lie about something if you actually believe something to be true. If I told you, Joe, the earth is flat, but I, really, truly believe that, I don't think that's a lie. And I don't think that Alec Baldwin believes that he pulled the trigger. And I think that that's something, we could get like a psychologist on here to talk about that. But I don't think that would be an uncommon thing to have such a traumatic experience like that.
I see what you're saying.
And you just, your brain doesn't know what to make of it. Maybe you're lying to yourself, or maybe that's what you believed from the get-go. Like, I couldn't have done that. I absolutely didn't do it. There was some sort of mistake. Or maybe that's what you told yourself after the fact, but it becomes your belief as kind of a coping mechanism for how, such a horrible tragedy occur. I mean, I think one thing is clear. He did not do that on purpose, even in the charges that got dropped in manslaughter.
Right.
He did not on purpose shoot somebody with the intent to kill.
Yeah.
So having that done at your hands would be, could you imagine if that happened to you?
Very true.
I mean, I don't know how you live. So your brain, your mind comes with ways to kind of cope with that and figure out a way to move forward in life. And I think that's one of it. So that's where I don't know. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily the case, because I'm not Alec Baldwin or in his mind. But I don't think that he's lying there. I don't think that that's the truth. But I don't think he's lying either.
And they talk about investigation, going back and investigating. Isn't this all on film? Aren't they always rolling on these sets?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. No, not really, though. Like, if you're actually filming something, so like, here's the difference. If you are filming, and this is why it's versus recording, because you can record until the sun goes down, right? Like, you record on like a, digital card or something like that, that's fine. If you are actually filming, you are only filming because you only have so much film to use, and it's very expensive.
Oh, and this is one of those old timey, so they're filming it.
Well, I still film. Most major productions
do they
would still I would hope so would still be using like film if you're trying to make like an actual movie that looks good. I don't know 100%, but you wouldn't be filming all the time.
That's okay. That's a good point. I assumed, and this is what happens when you assume. I assume that most movies now are digitally recorded, not on actual film.
I mean, that might be true, but so you don't know. There would be reason. I mean, it wouldn't be protocol on the movie set for cameras to be rolling all the time. The crux of it, though, is, somebody died, and somebody should be, but like, who should be held accountable? Like, immediate reaction, well, the person who pulled the trigger.
Yes.
But if you are pulling the trigger of a weapon, you would have no reason to ever believe that that weapon would you're on a movie set. You're not at a firing range.
That's true as well.
You would never have any reason to believe that pulling the trigger would cause any damage more so than a cap gun would when you pulled that trigger.
And the person responsible is still being charged, right?
But is that the person responsible? Who put the bullet in that gun? I mean, you don't really have a clear answer. You have the armorer who would be responsible for checking that.
Right.
And then you might make an assumption that that would be the person who put the bullet in that gun.
Or at the very least, didn't check it.
Yes, which that would bear responsibility in my eyes. But you don't know. Like, to me, ultimately, whoever put the bullet in that weapon would be responsible. But then you have the other line of thinking, Joe, which that's why it makes it so interesting to me. Alec Baldwin was a producer of this movie. Is that the buck stops here scenario? You know, are you, as a producer, responsible for everything that goes on? You know, I would argue not in this case.
Right.
I like that mindset, by the way. Like, I like that mindset. You're the CEO of a company, the buck stops here. Like, everything that goes on, whether I knew about it or not, it could be in a different country. If it was my company, I'm the person ultimately responsible. But, like, this is a criminal act that took, like, I don't know if I like that line of thinking right there. However, then, you have this, you know, news story that there were walkouts because people were concerned about on-set safety.
Yes.
And then you bring that, and there's like, well, then it comes back to the producer. I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, it is interesting. The not the signs that this was going to happen, obviously, but that there were shortcuts when it came to safety, right? Those signs were there. Obviously, we didn't know because who's following the filming of Rust? But those signs were there when you hear back now from people who were on the set.
I'm very interested about those.
The other thing that's surprising to me is that they're still firing guns with all the technology we have. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, why isn't it like CGI?
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that there would be a loaded weapon. Like, it's not. I understand. Like, I completely get why you would fire a prop gun on set.
But they're using.
Yeah, like, how that prop gun would ever be a weapon able to be turned into an actual weapon is what's amusing me. Like, I can see why you wouldn't want to use any sort of CGI because, like, it doesn't always look, you know, the same.
You want to hold a gun. I the prop part, the firing part.
But no, like even something that can be fired but doesn't have the ability to actually, you know, fire a projectile.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like, that sort of prop gun.
That's another thing that surprised me is that they actually use the shells of real bullets in these situations,
which seems, again,
yeah, right,
like there's a better way to use it.
You would think so.
I don't know. I did, there's so many, you know, ways of looking at that I just think are,
it's a tragic situation all around, right? I mean, whatever comes of this is not going to bring anyone back. It's a really unfortunate, tragic situation all around,
and you want to see somebody held responsible.
Well, of course.
Like,
yeah.
Like, that's
someone's
the thing.
Dead. Yeah.
Who didn't need to be.
Yes.
Like, in an extremely preventable situation. So, like, it's an accident, but it's not like a car accident. Like, this is like an extremely preventable.
Yes.
It's not a no fault. There is somebody at fault here. Determining who that is, it is a very interesting question.
You know, I should have looked at this before I went on the air, but remember, was it the Twilight Zone movie where the helicopter crashed and killed one of the actors on set? I wonder what...
Did that happen? I mean, this happened. The movie The Crow is famous for the, you know, something like this happening, a gun killing somebody on set.
I believe it was the Twilight Zone movie where they had a real helicopter over and the blades got tangled or something and killed one of the actors on the ground, but I don't know the specifics of who was criminally charged after that, if anybody.
I don't know. It's very interesting to me to kind of be following along, and then, you know, they go back to filming this.
That's actually the most interesting part. I mean, this is all interesting, but to me, it's just like you're going back to film this movie.
Do you? You know, my initial gut reaction is like this movie is going to be huge now.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I just didn't know how to
word it. But, like, I don't... I would feel a little dirty or guilty actually going to see it.
it's going to be one of those things where you might not file into the movie theater, but once it's on streaming, hey, wasn't that the movie? Wasn't that the one?
People are going to be interested in going to see this.
Yeah.
I also thought, like, I remember the morning waking up, you know, and I wake up and I just kind of go through, I read, like, a whole bunch of stuff. Like, seeing Baldwin, like, somebody passed away in a movie set shooting. And I assumed, like, this is, it's almost bad of me to say. I assumed it was Billy Baldwin. Because I assumed that it would have to be some sort of low budget, movie where they're not really following anything, and like that's how an accident would take place. When I saw it was Alec Baldwin, it did completely change the story for me, because like my initial assumption, Billy Baldwin, C-list movie, not a lot of people looking at what's going on set, an accident could happen, more realistically than Big budget movie star, this happening.
You wonder how big budget it is, though, after we heard about the shortcuts. I'm sure now a lot more money has gone into it on this new set in Montana.
One of the things I was thinking, I wasn't even thinking about, but we kept talking about it so much this morning, it just had to spill it out.
I was surprised to see him charged, number one. But then I was also surprised, because of the big deal they made about it, that the charges were kind of quietly dropped yesterday.
Big changes at Twitter, Joe, who removed some of the check marks. This is I went back and forth on this, Joe, and it's last night I was saying, well, I'm definitely not bringing this up because most people don't care, because most people aren't on Twitter. And even most of the people who are on Twitter could care less, because you know what changed about my Twitter experience this morning? Because it is where I sift through a lot of absolutely nothing. I mean, minus all the people complaining you just imagine the most insufferable people to be around. That's who's complaining about the loss of a blue check mark. This is the AP script that we were having fun with earlier this morning, Joe. Dionne Warwick and Beyonce are among the celebrities who have lost their blue check marks on Twitter. Stop right there. My initial reaction to this, and I was saying this earlier this morning in the 5 o'clock hour. All right, you're writing a story about big-time celebrities losing their blue check marks on Twitter. Beyonce, okay. And who do you go with the number two? Like a Kim Kardashian? Do you go with like a big movie?
You're talking about current celebrities, yeah.
Taylor Swift, Kanye West, some big, huge star. Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
No, Dionne Warwick, who, Joe, I could not, before you explained it to me this morning, I could not for the life of me tell you who Dionne Warwick is.
Dionne Warwick actually had some major hits. That's what Friends Are For is obviously the biggest one. The song where she sang on stage with Stevie Wonder, Elton John. It's a great video. Dionne Warwick, I think what they're doing, Brian...
I needed you to tell me it was a she. I didn't even know.
Number one...
Even...
Do you know that song?
That's what Friends Are For?
Yeah.
Even me, in my head... Like, to me, it's ambiguous if that's a male or female. That's what friends are. I can hear both a male singing that and a woman singing that.
Well, that's
that.
Because Stevie Wonder has a part in the song.
Oh, okay.
If you're talking about the live version, which I think is popular. But Dionne Warwick is... I see what they're doing here, Brian. This is how I take it, right? Beyonce, current celebrity, right? Dionne Warwick was big in the 80s and the 90s, maybe even the 70s. And I think what that's saying is generations of celebrities are being vocal about losing their blue check marks.
Ah, okay. Dionne Warwick. Script continues. Yesterday, Twitter started removing the blue checks from accounts that don't pay for verification. Warwick tweeted on Tuesday, quote, "The way Twitter is going, anyone could be me now." The ego on Dionne Warwick to think that somebody would want to immediately impersonate Dionne Warwick, I don't think people are lining up to create that account. Twitter charges $8 a month for individual users to be identified and have the check, starting price of $1,000 a month for organizations, which you'll see, I mean, that's like, you know, sports teams and... organization, businesses, all those other things.
Yeah, you've seen some of the local TV stations. They have the what is it, a golden check mark now, and their employees are accounts off of that, so they get the blue check mark without paying for it. I did a little research into it this morning.
The way Twitter is going, anyone could be me right now. It's very funny for Dionne Warwick, who I didn't know until a few hours ago.
But you did, you just didn't know you knew.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not entirely true, though, right? Like, how do I tell Beyonce from somebody without a blue check? How do I tell Beyonce from somebody pretending to be Beyonce? Well, let me tell you. Beyonce probably has like 34 million followers. And someone pretending to Beyonce might have 4. So that would be your giveaway.
15.5 million for Beyonce.
That would be your giveaway as to who the real person is. The other thing that I just cannot wrap my head around, the biggest, you know, whiners about this that I see online are journalists and writers who have been complaining about. I see a few complaints. One I laugh at all the time. You know, this is going, I saw a tweet yesterday. This is going to be, you know, devastating. How can we trust information on here? You know, if some big major event with life and death information is on it and it can't be trusted or verified, like, how that's going to be a huge detriment. And I said, well, wait a second. One, I don't think anybody is getting their life or death information about an event unfolding right now on Twitter.
No.
First and foremost, the EAS test. You know, there's other ways. Your cell phone might start ringing and dinging like it would. That might be where you get the information. And the other thing was, well, okay, if a private business is running a service that is your first and foremost go-to for life and death information, don't you think that's something worth paying for? That somebody should be paying for? If that really is the case, it's not the case. But if your, you know, exaggeration was there, shouldn't that be the case?
Yes.
I mean, I would think so. And then the audacity of newspaper writers who must be very concerned about this. This is the William Shatner. He's not a newspaper writer, but he's like the most famous person with this tweet. Hey, what is this about blue checks going away unless we pay for Twitter? I've been here for 15 years giving my time and thoughts all for nothing. These people who act like we are providing all your content and you want us to pay you, acting like they're getting nothing in return. Without Twitter, all of these writers would be completely unknown.
Yes. Yes.
They would be limited to whoever is reading their column in a paper that is behind a paywall.
That, for the most part, for most papers, more than $8.
Do you know why it's behind a paywall? Because the paper is a business that needs to make money. So is Twitter.
And that, you know, how can people know who to trust? Isn't that on you to build up your reputation? Right? If you're a journalist, okay, you don't have your blue check mark, but if you've delivered, you know, good news, if you've delivered hard-hitting stories, I'll know to go to your account, right? I mean, the fact that it's the blue check mark or no one trusts me, I think a lot of that goes on you. I think a lot of that lays on what is on your page. What are you reporting? And are you doing an accurate job of reporting it? It puts the ball in your court. People won't just click on blue check marks and say, I trust this person.
I think people are worried about.
You have to build yourself up. You have to build your account up and, hey, I followed this person. So if someone tries to fake being this person, I already followed them. So I know it's them. And they've done great work. That's where I'm going for my news.
Hey, they're, you know, concerned about mistaken identity, which, you know, takes everybody to be an idiot, which isn't totally the case yet.
No, there are idiots, but not most people.
I just like the... This isn't worth $8 a month. Really? It isn't worth $8 a month? Because you are constantly, like, let me go back and see how often you're on this app. And this is the thing you're not willing to pay $8 a month for. And mind you, again, it's a business. It's not the mail, right? It is not some public service. If you want to turn it into a public service and have the government run their version of Twitter, like, be my guest and like launch it and have it go off, whatever. But it's not. It's a business that has been just losing money, losing money, losing money. And guess what happens in businesses that lose money? You should know because you work for a newspaper. Guess what they're doing? They're laying off people. They're cutting services. They're changing. They're charging people who want to use their service. Twitter is doing the same thing because they're a business. They're not. again, the U.S. mail or anything like that.
No. I do think to some people it was just the realization that, you know, that they're not as important as they thought. I know I'm not important. I never had a blue check mark. So it was no loss for me.
I think that's got to be it, right? Like, people just feel like they're, you know, they lost some, which again shows that it's valuable to you.
Yes.
It's probably, yeah. If you marked it down on a piece of paper and really thought out, it's probably more valuable to these people than $8 a month, really. Anyways, we'll be talking about a number of other things when we come back. B-Maz and Beamer on WBEN. That's right, Brian Mazeroski and Joe Beamer back with you on WBEN. All right, Joe, you know, so a few stories that I was just kind of obsessed with that we were, you know, rifling through over the first, you know, few minutes of the show. Then there's this one. I love this story. France taking aim at Miller.
No one's safe. No one's safe.
Totally. Which, by the way, I do have to mention this because we talked about this at the end of yesterday, that government UFO hearing that was going on yesterday. U.S. government tracking more than 650 potential UFO cases, according to the Pentagon. That's the news that came out.
All right. That now, yesterday. When I came in at 4:30, now it makes sense what Nori was talking about.
650. How many of those are camera blurs? How many of those are, like, drones?
Right. The cheap drones you can buy at the pharmacy.
But that still leaves, like, you know, probably like 200 actual, you know, real things. They don't know what's going on.
I will I'm sorry, unless, you know, it lands here and talks to me, and then I will never be convinced that I'm convinced there are outside worlds. I am. I'll never be convinced that they will get here before we get to them.
Well, the champagne of beers is they're being gone after by France, who is just, I mean, they will let no one. I mean, you talk, this is like an old wine snob thing, right?
Yes.
Champagne, right? Not all champagne is champagne.
Oh, yes.
That's like you call something champagne, and every once in a while, well, it's technically it's only champagne if it comes from the Champagne region of France.
I worked at a liquor store for 6 months, and believe me, I learned exactly what you can and can't call champagne.
So there's champagne, there's sparkling wine. Is that the
Yeah, and there's
idea?
Prosecco, but that's also very specific.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah.
It's not the same thing?
Prosecco's not the same thing as champagne.
But, like, to me,
it
would be the same
to
thing.
To me, yeah. If you work at a place like I used to, and you know, you speak of the wine snobs, Brian, that's most of your during the day business. Believe me, if you call the wrong thing champagne and they think that's what they're getting, they will come back. That's all I have to say.
Well, at the request of the trade body defending the interest of houses and growers of the northeastern French sparkling wine, that's the actual champagne, by the way, Belgian customs crushed more than 2,000 cans of Miller High Life, the Comité Champagne, that's the Champagne Committee,
yes,
asked for destructions of a shipment of 2,352 cans on the grounds that the century-old motto used by the American brewery, which, Joe, is High Life is?
Miller?
The Champagne of Beers.
Yes.
It's the Champagne of Beers, infringes on the protected designation of the origin champagne. So what did they do? They intercepted the package and went out, destroyed all of the beer, and crushed the cans. Unbelievable. Miller High Life, since 1903, has been known as the, since 1906, sorry, has been known as the Champagne of Beers.
But now they're finally starting to...
Well, now, yeah, over 100 years later, Champagne is going to, the Champagne region of France, looking to crack down on their use of champagne.
So now, I've had Miller High Life only twice in my life, both times with you, Brian. I never knew that. I thought that's what...
Great beer.
I thought that's just what people called it. Until this story, no lie, I never knew it was actually printed the packaging Champagne of
Beers. It's on the can?
That is hilarious. Until we started looking this up an hour ago, I did not know it was actually printed on the can.
It's on the can. They have put out Miller High Life around the holidays in champagne bottles, which, yes, I have bought and given to people who have been at my house in champagne flutes, given them High Life. And I don't know about the pony bottles, which is another thing High Life is famous for.
Yes.
I don't know if champagne of beers is printed on the ponies.
The only two times I've had Miller High Life were in those bottles.
But it is on all the cans, and there's a whole bunch of them up in my attic. I love High Life, Joe. I love it maybe because it's the champagne of beers.
Yeah.
That, I mean, this is a look inside my mind and how marketing works and how it works so much and so well on me, Joe. Miller High Life being the champagne of beers, I don't know if I ever buy Miller High Life if it's not the champagne of beers.
It's perfect marketing. The marketing is what has you buying that beer.
It really is.
Because compared to other domestic beers, I mean, how does that fare?
I mean,
compared to PBR, how does Miller High Life fare?
Right. Like, there is a little bit of a taste difference if you have them right then and there. But if I'm like, hey, you know, give me a beer, and you toss me a High Life versus you toss me a Utica Club versus you toss me a PBR versus you toss me a Bud Light versus Blue Light versus any of these other things, I'm not going to say anything one or the other. Like, you're not going to hand me one of those and I'll be like, can I have one of those other things I just mentioned instead? It's all pretty much the same. Again, there are differences between the two. You can taste them. But in general, if you're just having one, they're similar. What sets High Life apart? It's the champagne of beers. It comes in pony bottles. Pony bottles are fun. It comes in a big champagne bottle. It's fun. And you can say to people, you know, because this is the look you get if you are somewhere. If you're around our age, maybe this isn't true with the older crowd. You're around our age and you bring a bunch of beer and you hand somebody and it's a High Life. And they'll give you this face like, huh? Like this? Because everyone always drinks the same stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's Blue Light. It's Bud Light.
Miller Light.
Yeah.
Not to be
not
confused.
As much.
Not to be confused with Miller High Life Light, which, when I was younger, learned is a separate beer.
It's a different beer.
Miller High Life Light is different than Miller Light. And guess what Miller High Life Light says on the can? The champagne and beers. I just learned this.
Light.
And I've had a Miller High Life Light thinking it was a Miller Light.
But like everyone has the same stuff. So like you give someone a High Life and they're like, what? Like, what's this? Like, okay, Grandpa. And I go, it's the champagne of beers. Like, that's the selling point. And then you get it like, well, okay, let's see. And everyone's like, yeah, well, it's not that bad. But marketing works on me.
Marketing works perfectly.
I am not alone, and I know I'm not alone. And I think you're kidding yourself if you think that you are above being swayed by the packaging on what you buy.
I will admit it 100%. PBR. PBR is, there's a reason it is moving back into bars. Because people like to drink out of that PBR can. You very rarely see...
Why?
It's for me, PBR reminds me of...
Is it the Blue Ribbon? Like, you're like, this is an award-winning beer.
Well, it is. PBR reminds me of college. I mean, I'm going to say it. I like the PBR. I like to drink it out of the can. You notice it's not on draft in many places. It used to be at one bar on Chippewa. They closed. But PBR in cans, I think, is perfect marketing. Hey, this is a cheap beer. Mm-hmm. That you probably had a lot when you were younger. And holding that can might remind you of younger times. If a bar offers PBR, 90% of the time, I'm having the PBR.
Here's the thing. You see somebody at a bar holding a can of PBR.
Yes.
You think one of two things. What do you think of that person? What is going on over there?
The mic fell off.
Okay. Well, you're twisting that and it's just like screeching through.
Sorry.
What? You see someone drinking a PBR. What do you think of that person?
They got a really good deal on it.
No, like of the person. What type of person is that?
I think one of your answers is probably going to be somebody who doesn't care about the taste of beer.
It's two types of person.
Okay.
You're either one, you're a no fuss guy. You just like, give me a beer. Like, I don't care what PBR says. I just give me the beer. It's all light. Give me the one that's $3. Boom.
Yes.
Number two, you're a hipster. Because those are the only two people.
You think PBR is a hipster beer?
Oh, it's 100%
I think Miller High Life's more of a hipster beer than PBR.
It might fall into that category, yeah, too. But the reason why PBR is back in bars is because it's a hipster beer.
The first thing, it's cheap. $2 for a can when everything else is $5.
Well, I mean, the bar would rather you buy the one that's more expensive.
Yeah, I know.
The cheapness is not the reason why it's coming back. It's popular amongst hipsters.
No, I'm saying that's one of the reasons I will get it.
Oh,
if,
yeah.
If it's on the menu for $2.
We were in Cincinnati before the Bills game earlier this year. 24-ounce cans for $3
that's
a PBR.
It's amazing.
And it's great. Like, why would I drink anything else? And I hope people looked at me and didn't think, that's a hipster. I hope they looked at me and said, that's a no-fuss guy and no frills.
That's right.
And it does say something a little bit about you, what brand you kind of go with.
No frills. What does that mean with beer? No frills. Like, I like Miller Lite. Miller Lite because it's low calorie. I like Miller Lite. And they say that on the box, no frills. What the hell does that mean?
You could be a frills beer. I'm full of frills sometimes.
What's a frills beer?
Oh, my goodness. There's a million of them on there. It's got fruit notes. It's got this. This IPA is hopped with Mosaic versus this IPA is, we run it through the hop torpedo before it's a double dry hopped version of this. You could be the most frilsy person in the world talking about beer.
See, and you know me. I like to go to the domestic beers, the Blue Lights, which, of course, the first one I say is not a domestic beer, but you know what I mean. But what makes Miller Lite more frills than a PBR? Because there is a price difference there. You know what I mean? Like, what's more frills about a Miller Lite?
I don't think there is anything.
Okay. That's what I was trying to get to.
No, yeah. No. They're both no frills beers. There are plenty of frills beers. And I'm a fan of a lot of them.
Oh, I know you are.
I like them. Not as much as I used to. I can't go out and drink. I'm more likely now. You get me, 7 years ago, I'm going out, I'm getting almost exclusively Frills beers.
Yes.
And probably ones with the coolest packaging, because that's how, I am. Now, almost exclusively no Frills beers. You know what I'm getting at a bar right now? The most no Frills IPA is a Hayburner.
Okay.
Because everyone has it, yep, and you can just ask for it. Everyone knows what you're talking about, and you don't have to ask anything about it. So you can get that. I'm getting some sort of light beer, a Blue Light, a PBR, anything in that category, I'll order, or a Guinness. I mean, it's one of those three things. Like, distinct brands, too, of exactly what I'm getting every time I go out. I want to be a no-frills person.
Yeah.
That's just me when I go out. I get annoyed when I go to a bar, Joe, when it's extreme. I mean, now I don't really get out. I go out for events. And events, a big game or something like that, you'll have a lot of people at the bar, a lot of people trying to get the bartender's attention. And I'll get annoyed at a huge event with a packed shoulder-to-shoulder bar when somebody's ordering a drink that has 3-plus ingredients, a frills drink. I say, hey, give me this that you can get right away.
Yeah, give me two of them so I don't have to come back here.
That's right. That's me.
No, those heavier beers, me, Brian, I just can't. I've tried numerous times. Give me a light beer. Give me a PBR. I'm all set. That's something that goes down easy, right? Isn't that what they say?
803-0930, you can weigh in. On our text board, some people already weighing in. Someone says no frills means cheap. Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. If you have anything under, what's under what now? Like under 5 for sure, but you probably might say under 7.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are, you're no frills. Someone else saying the price of PBR went up because it's popular with hipsters. And then someone else saying PBR, yuck. You won't have it. Well, I guess one thing you'll never say about a PBR, it's not going to be crushed by, intercepted by Belgium authorities.
Right.
And crushed because it's infringing on a whole region's trademark.
We went through this whole thing, didn't mention Keystone. It's another good beer.
No. I tell you what you don't find in the bar.
What's Keystone?
Keystone.
Yeah, I know. Keystone Light, come on.
Has anyone over the age of 20 ever bought Keystone?
I did, just for I bought one of the tall boys just for fun.
just for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, but let's
Keystone Light.
But like that's the thing. It's for,
but that's actually pretty good marketing. Because this is what I drank in college. Let's.
But like you bought it for that reason.
Yeah.
I do things like that all the time. And I know people will say, like, no, I'm not tricked by marketing or anything like that. I guarantee that people out there do it too. Josh's Jacks.
Yeah.
How many boxes of cereal did Josh Allen sell at $5 a box? Like, what's the markup on there? Versus, what is it? It's Apple Jacks. You got Apple Jacks, and then you have generic Apple Jacks.
All three taste the same.
$1.50 or $2.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the same. We're buying the Josh's Jacks because I want to look at Josh Allen when I'm eating my cereal.
And Josh Allen's coffee. The markup on that, the JA17.
Is that not... I can't speak because I'm not a coffee drinker.
To be fair, I have not had it. But it is a markup, and it's in the same aisle as the Tim Hortons K-Cups or the Dunkin' Donuts K-Cups.
Is there a difference between all of those? Can you taste the difference?
No, we're talking about marketing. I think Tim Hortons marketing. I think that's why you see the long lines. Because, no offense to Tim Hortons, you know, I don't have anything against their coffee. But if there's a Dunkin' Donuts, which I live near a Dunkin' Donuts, I'm going to go to Dunkin' Donuts.
Is there a difference?
I think they both have good coffee.
The same way we were just talking about, you know, what do you think of somebody? What's your opinion of that person when you see them holding a PBR can? Do you have a different opinion of somebody based on the coffee cup they're holding at 9 a.m. in the morning at work?
If they have a Starbucks, that means they like a lot of ingredients, to go back to your bar thing, in their drink. Because I've had just a plain French roast from Starbucks, and I'll tell you, it's like your high hoppy beers. I can't. No, thank you. Right? So if they're drinking something from Starbucks, okay, they like a lot of sugar, a lot of ingredients in their drink. If you got a Tim Hortons, if you got a Dunkin' Donuts, you probably just like either your coffee black or maybe you have a cream and a sugar in there.
I see. This is my thing. As a non-coffee drinker, and if I was to be a judgmental person, this is how I would immediately think. You're asking me to judge the person based on the cup in their hand.
Okay.
9 o'clock in the morning coffee cup. I see you with a Starbucks. You're a little frilsy person. You got a lot of stuff going on. You got, you know, you're high maintenance.
You're holding $10 in your hand.
You're high maintenance. You're holding a McDonald's cup in your hand. You're a no frills.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows that place for, that's like a thing. You know what? I'm going to go through in the morning. There's not going to be a long line like there is at Tim Hortons. And I don't care. Just give me the cup.
Well, and another thing about McDonald's, and I think Tim will back me up on this. They actually have good coffee. Like, that's another one you can find in the store and K-Cup form. They actually have good coffee.
They sell their coffee in the store like that?
Oh, yeah. McCafe?
They're known for...
They're not known for it. You're right. If there's a... And you can see it right here on Sweet Home. You could probably go right through McDonald's while Tim Hortons is backed up. I don't think there's a difference in their coffee.
See, like, that's me. That's the no-frills person is not going to wait in the line for basically the same thing they can get across the street with no line.
Yeah. And you know what? Any gas station can have good coffee. The problem is, they made it at 5 a.m., and it's the same batch sitting there at 8. There is a difference in the taste.
Yeah, like a 7-Eleven cup.
Yeah.
What's that?
7-Eleven cup means you were up early, right? You were up at 5 a.m. before anything else opened, and that was a fresh pot. Or you were in a bind, or you saw they were making a fresh pot. There's a lot of things you can draw from that.
7-Eleven cup tells me you really wanted a Slurpee. It's just a little too early for you to dive in.
Or you're on the road a lot.
You probably ate a couple Hostess, too.
Yeah, well, because
no one goes into 7-Eleven and just gets a cup of coffee.
No, but when I'm on the road for, like, tech games, right, and you pass through towns that might just have a Sheetz. Sheetz actually has good coffee. They grind the beans right in front of you. But you see that's someone who's been on the road. Right, that's someone who's on a long trip, and that was the convenience store when they had to go to the bathroom. If you're like me, we're not making another stop.
Not a lot of 7-Elevens right on the side of the road, though.
No, I guess I was just equating 7-Eleven to convenience store coffee.
You need a gas.
You need a gas, or you had to go to the bathroom. Because with me, you do all three in one stop.
Not locally. You're not going at work if you see someone with a 7-Eleven cup and you're like, you must have needed to go to the bathroom.
You're on the road. Or, you know, I used to work with someone who would always get their coffee at A+, which I know now is 7-Eleven. And Brian, they got it there because they had a rewards card. So after 10 cups, they got a free one. And that's the only reason they went to A+ for their coffee.
You still got to buy it 10 times.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good deal.
Like that's, I don't think you're really getting the value out of there. Some on the text board, people are coming in. Jenny is a great. I agree. I'm a cream ale type of person. There's a beer where you feel like if you're going to do the old-fashioned beer dinner, which we my brother got to learn that for the first time. We were in Cincinnati, a couple of my friends and my brother came along. He's about 10 years younger than I am. And it was a little education for him because we were about to go out and he's saying like, "Well, what are we going to do for dinner?" And my buddy goes home like, "Buddy, the good old-fashioned beer dinner. We're drinking." Like, that's for dinner, fill up on beer. Now, of course, my brother's the smart person because at the end of the night, everyone's just starving. Nothing's open.
You guess with Skyline Chili?
You're in a little bit. No. You're in a little bit of a bind. I made an entire Polish sausage on a pan, plain, for everyone to just eat with a fork.
Okay.
But if you're doing beer dinner, Guinness, if that's too dark for you, you don't like the nitro, a cream ale, a little more body in there, a little more filling. Speaking of getting stuff for the novelty, which is like, that's the hipster why that's PBR is popular. That's the high life. It's kind of like the novelty of getting the champagne of beers. I bought for the novelty. They have cream ale now at the arena for Sabres games.
Oh.
And when they first offered it, the first time I saw it, I was like, well, I have to buy this because at $14 a can, this is the world's most expensive Jenny cream ale anywhere in the world.
That's the thing about
easily. That's a novelty purchase.
That's something about at the arena or at the stadium. Like, they have some of these cheaper brands, but it's the same price.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that is just the novelty. I'm just holding this can around.
That's like, here's something that's a dollar anywhere else in the world, and it's $14 here. It's like, that is my version of going to that, like, fancy New York restaurant where they have the, gold foil over the dessert, and it costs, like, $1,400 or something like that.
Yeah.
For a, ice cream.
Yeah, for something you could get at 7-Eleven.
Yes, exactly. All right, Joe.
Hardline Sunday.
Big hardline.
County Executive Mark Poloncarz and others. So make sure you join us.
I feel bad for the others. They don't get the billing.
They haven't confirmed yet, so they can't get the billing.
All right, listen in for that over the weekend. Listen in for David coming up, Tom, after that, and the news with Randy. Thanks for spending the week with us. B-Mans and Beamer on WBEN.